15. The morning after I see the baby standing amidst the tall grass, I wake up with a tear-stained face and a dull but engulfing heartache. I tell Ma that I'm ill and need to rest through breakfast. And after checking my temperature with a concerned face, she sighs in relief at the absence of a fever. "You have such dark circles under your eyes, Amanda," Ma says, while Emily looks on from where she is lacing up her boots. "Have you been sleeping all right? You're not too used to lying on the ground now, are you?" "No, Ma," I croak, keeping my eyes closed. "The mattress is wonderful. I just need a little bit more sleep, that's all." But I don't sleep. I lie in bed, under the quilt, even though it's late enough in the morning for the heat to be stifling again, and sweat myself into the sheets and feathers while I listen to the sound of the children arguing over a toy, and Emily making breakfast, and Ma comforting an especially irritable Hannah. After they've finished eating, Pa goes outside to work on the table set he's been carving up, and the children follow. I hear Joanna ask Emily if I might feel like playing tag when I wake up, and Emily says she doesn't know. Soon I hear them screaming and whooping from outside, and I know that I'm finally alone. A hand takes my wrist and squeezes. I snap upright in bed with a scream, only to startle Emily enough to drain all the color from her face. "It's just me," she cries, her free hand over her heart. "You gave me a fright, sister. Were you having a nightmare?" Embarrassed and at my wit's end, I begin to cry. "I'm in a nightmare all the time, Emily," I manage, trying to make her understand even though she never will. "I just want to wake up." I am not even a mother, yet at the same time I am the worst one who has ever lived. "You're suffering through one of the most horrid types of loss there is," she whispers and pulls me close so she can stroke my hair while I weep. "It's only natural for you to feel this way right now." I want to ask her if it's natural for my child's soul to be so unsettled that it lingers around to haunt me. I want to ask her if it's natural for me not to be fully certain which parts of my life are real and which are not. I want to ask her if she'll take Pa's rifle and end things for me. "I'm fine," I whisper, and Emily squeezes my hand again. "Or I will be, anyway." My sister offers to stay with me inside for the remainder of the day, but suddenly all I want to do is get out of these dampened sheets and go outside, where I can breathe in the endlessness of the open sky. I get dressed quickly and we go out together, and Emily looks surprised when I suggest we play a game with Joanna and Charles. It feels good to have an excuse to avoid Hannah for a little longer, even if I am still pinching with cramps and tired enough to sleep for a week. I make sure not to look back at the stretch of prairie that rests behind the cabin, where I saw the baby in the dark. I don't want to see anything else. I must regain control. Later that afternoon, Emily and I are sitting on the fence with the children when I see her face change as she looks toward the forest. Zeke is in the distance, riding on horseback, about halfway between the cabin and the trees. He is alone. There are big covered buckets resting on each side of the saddle, presumably to collect water in. Emily watches him grow closer from the shade of her sunbonnet with an unsure expression. Pa doesn't look too thrilled at the sight of the boy, but Ma and the children wave and call out hello. "Hello, neighbors," Zeke calls as he approaches, and the children continue to wave wildly from where they stand on the fence. "You've certainly cleaned up that yard, haven't you? Look inside when you go to get your water," Pa says from where he whittles a design into the leg of a chair. "You won't recognize it, guaranteed." "Let's hope not," Zeke says jokingly. Emily shifts her weight uncomfortably beside me while she looks over at Zeke. He rides into the front clearing, dismounts his horse, and tips his hat to Emily. She smiles, but not as brightly as she did the other times he was here. Warm satisfaction washes over my heart. "Too bad, Zeke." I fight the urge to ask him about the knock on the window the other night. "How are things, Emily Verner?" Zeke asks, low enough for Ma and Pa not to hear.
"Very well, thank you," she replies quaintly. "And how is the doctor?"
The same, Zeke says, then looks over his shoulder to the forest line. Why does he always look like he's anticipating something?
He's in Elmwood at the moment.
Were you here the other night? I ask, cutting him off and ignoring my better judgment. Zeke and Emily look at me in surprise. On the prairie, I mean. Did you knock on our window and then run away? Zeke's eyebrows furrow at my accusation.
It wasn't me, he says after an uncomfortable pause.
He removes the buckets from the sides of the saddle quickly, purposefully avoiding my gaze, then starts walking back toward the well pump.
I haven't been here since I came with my father.
He doesn't ask more about the incident, doesn't wonder aloud who would knock on our window at night and then run away, and doesn't even attempt to woo Emily with some other flirtatious line or gesture, which only makes me feel quite certain that he is the one who did it. It had to have been him. I knew I didn't imagine it, I didn't. And it most certainly wasn't the baby with the animal eyes.
Why do you still think he did that?
Emily asks after Zeke's out of earshot, not angry, just genuinely curious.
I remember that night very well. I didn't hear...
So just because you didn't hear anything, nothing happened? I say, more shrilly than I intend. My sister frowns. I know what I heard, Emily. Zeke and his father are the only ones who live around here for miles and miles. She looks aggravated now, but holds her tongue. What? I challenge, trying to get her to stop being so god-cursedly perfect all the time. You don't want to disagree with me? Afraid that you'll push me over the edge because my baby died? Emily's mouth drops open, and I instantly regret that I said it. I'm sorry, I say and put my hand on hers. I only just got her back. I mustn't ruin it now just because of Zeke. I'm so sorry, sister. That wasn't fair.
No, it wasn't,
she replies, looking after Zeke as he passes by the front door without looking in.
But it's all right. I understand. Amanda, are you sure you're feeling all right?
I'm exhausted and sore. What more do you want me to say about it? Emily's voice lowers even more.
I'm not talking about the baby.
Emily, I say and close my eyes in frustration. I would tell you if I wasn't. I lie because I only just got her back, and I refuse to risk distancing myself by reawakening the fear that clouded her eyes when I told her about the devil in the woods. The children run to follow Zeke, asking questions about the forest and begging to know when he'll come back for the scary stories he promised Emily last time he was here. The scary stories. I'd almost forgotten. After Zeke disappears around the corner of the cabin, I look, finally, to the spot where I saw the haunt of the infant. The grasses bend back and forth at the mercy of the breezes, and my stomach turns at the knowledge of what is on the ground there, in it. I wonder what type of story Zeke knows. I wonder if any of them sound like mine.
You really should come for those stories, you know, I say once he's back at his horse, trying my best to sound earnest.
I would love to hear some about the prairie. Emily sighs from beside me, then crosses her arms over her chest. She thinks that I'm fooling. Zeke fumbles with the saddle straps that wrap around the closed water containers. He pauses before turning slowly to look at me.
How do you know that there are any?
Well, you know, I say and shrug. I can only imagine how the isolation of this place could cause people to go mad. Zeke stares at me, his expression serious.
Where did you hear that?
She didn't hear it anywhere, Emily cuts in apologetically. She doesn't believe that I actually want to hear any stories. Judging by the angry nudge of her boot, she thinks that I'm teasing Zeke, maybe even trying to get him to admit to knocking on the window. She's especially tired today and wasn't feeling well earlier. I'm fine, sister, I insist. Really? I look back to Zeke. I just thought it'd be nice to get away and enjoy a story or two. I guess I could use the distraction. It's only a half lie. Emily looks a bit more convinced.
Well, if you're sure you really want to.
I shrug. It's better than sitting on a fence with nothing to look at but our own shadows. Zeke and Emily laugh, and I know that I have won.
Please, Zeke,
Charles says from where he stands, petting the horse's nose.
I love spooky stories.
Yes, please, adds Joanna.
We can even take the really scary ones.
Zeke removes his hat to wipe the sweat from his forehead, deliberating, then puts it back on.
We'll do it tomorrow afternoon, he says, but only if Emily agrees to sit by me so I don't get too scared.
My sister blushes, of course.
Maybe I will, Emily says, and maybe I won't. I guess we'll have to see if you actually show up.
This makes Zeke laugh. I hate the sound of it just as much as I do the redness in Emily's cheeks. I swear, something good had better come of this. Something useful.
That's fair enough, he says. I should be going now.
Why in the afternoon? Joanna asks as he mounts his horse. Aren't you supposed to tell spooky stories at night, around a fire?
Zeke's smile flickers away for just a second. He has to know something. Why else would he avoid Joe's question?
I knew it.
He waves to Pa and thanks him for the water.
See you tomorrow afternoon, everyone. So long, Emily Verner.
So long, Zeke.
Emily grins, and then he's going. When she sees me eyeing her, the grin fades.
What?
Nothing. I take a deep breath to release the pressure in my chest.
Oh, please, she says. Just because you're hurting doesn't mean I won't call you out in a lie.
That's fair enough,
I say, mocking Zeke in a flawless impression.
Fair enough, Emily Verner. Now, if you wouldn't mind coming on over here to sit next to me, just so I can smell your heavenly hair.
My sister erupts into laughter.
Oh, my Lord, she manages in between breaths. You are absolutely ridiculous.
You can't be cross anymore, I say with a smile. I made you laugh.
Oh, wretched.
Pa abandons his project for a moment to take a swig of whiskey from the flask on his belt. He watches Zeke get smaller into the distance.
Why didn't he look inside the cabin? He calls over to us. He said he was going to, and then he never did. You would have thought he'd be interested in seeing it.
I'm sure he'll look next time he comes, Emily says. He seemed to be in a bit of a hurry.
It's so strange that they insist on using that pump.
Pa takes another sloppy gulp that leaves his beard sparkling with amber droplets of liquor.
I don't think they need the water. They told me in Elmwood that those woods are veined with creeks.
It's much cleaner than creek water.
Emily looks insulted on Zeke's behalf.
They probably only use it for drinking and use the creek water for everything else.
Maybe, Pa says. Anyway, did I hear something about scary stories? You'd better go inside and ask your Ma about it. You know how she feels about those sorts of things.
He secures the flask back onto his belt and returns to his work.
If you do end up going, take the snake catcher.
The snake catcher is a contraption Pa rigged up that consists of a wire loop at the end of a walking stick. You pull the end of the wire to close the loop, trapping any snakes that might be trying to strike. So far, nobody has used it to catch a real snake. Ma just said that she doesn't want the stories to be satanic, I assure him. And we will take the snake catcher. Pa goes back to work, and my sister and I hop down from the fence.
I know what you did, Emily says as we make our way to go talk to Ma inside the cabin. And I have to say thank you, sister. I know you don't like Zeke, but you still put my feelings ahead of yours, and actively at that. You are truly the dearest friend I could ever hope for.
Her words have the opposite effect on me than what I think she intended. Leave it to Emily to give me the benefit of the doubt in the times when I deserve it the least. I wonder for a moment what would have become of my sister if I had run away with Henry. Would she finally be able to see people for who they really are? Would it have benefited her to be here without me? The dreamy smile on her face suggests so. And it makes me feel like I deserve everything that's been happening.
You're welcome, I say, sealing my fate in hell. I love you, Emily.
16. The place where we meet up with Zeke the following afternoon is halfway between the cabin and the forest. He is working to get a fire started in the rock-lined pit when we all arrive. Halved logs that are crumbling with dead bark are arranged in a widened triangle around the area. I didn't hear the infant crying last night, but I won't allow myself to feed any hope that might suggest nothing is wrong here. The emptiness inside of me, both physically and not, is still new and strange enough that I can never feel truly certain about anything that is happening, or what came before this. What exactly do I hope to learn from whatever story Zeke is about to tell?
I've always known this spot was here, but I've never used it until now, Zeke admits, his hands on his knees as he bends down to poke the fire and make sure it kindles.
I sit on one of the logs, and the children scramble up on top of another.
I think it's probably the old camping place of somebody who traveled through the prairie at one point. Either way, a little bird somewhere told me that you just cannot tell a scary story without the presence of a fire. So here we are.
Joanna tugs on the tie of her sunbonnet and grins shyly.
I guess it's a good thing we came in the daytime, she says. Ma said we wouldn't have been allowed to come if it had been at night.
Your ma is a smart woman, Zeke says.
He sits down on the last log and smiles hopefully up at Emily. She looks back with an arched brow and a half-grin before sitting beside me. I want to laugh, but I mustn't anger Zeke. I need to hear what else has happened on this prairie.
There are lots of animals and other things that like to hunt at night.
What other things? I want to ask. But I hold my tongue. Tell me what is happening to me.
So today, Zeke continues, I thought I'd share a story with you that my grandfather used to tell me when I was younger, whenever I was acting especially rowdy or cross. He lived in the same cabin that we do now, you see. He lived near the prairie his entire life.
Zeke tells us about Jasper Kensington, who was well known and equally liked around Elmwood, a family man who made a living by hauling in wood from the forest near his cabin and carving it into beautiful pieces of furniture to be sold by one of the town vendors.
That's what our pa does,
Joanna gasps, and Zeke suppresses a smile. For a moment, I become worried. I hope he isn't making something up as he goes along, twisting important things around just so that the story is more personalized and likely to scare the children. I need him to tell the story like he heard it. I need to know if my mind is breaking. I saw it on his face yesterday when I mentioned the prairie. He has information that could help me.
He came into town every other Friday, Zeke begins, the heat from the fire smearing his features together, and never missed a day in nearly 15 years.
Here we go.
Until one especially cruel summer. The vendors expecting Mr. Kensington that day simply assumed he came down with something, or needed to tend to a matter at home. Things happen out here on the prairie, Zeke tells us, his voice ominous. Things happen out here all the time.
The children's eyes are aglow with anticipation. I lean forward, praying that I'll be able to somehow find help in Zeke's words.
So, while surprising, Jasper's absence caused no serious alarm. Until 4 days later, that is, when he stumbled into the center of town without a horse, limping and sunburned, and rambling bouts of complete and utter nonsense. He was smiling, Zeke continues, smiling like a madman and laughing to the sky, as if he'd drunk more than a few fingers of whiskey. He was covered from head to toe in blood, and he was carrying a scythe.
Ooh,
Joanna cries, delightfully repulsed.
What's a scythe?
Asked Charles.
They use it to harvest wheat.
Joanna spurts excitedly, hardly able to contain herself.
They are so scary, Charles. They look like giant claws. I saw one on the mountain once when Pa took me into...
Let Zeke go on, I urge the children. I want to know what happens next. Emily waits quietly from where she sits beside me. Zeke nods.
I killed my girls, he cried gleefully to a group of children who were playing jacks by the well. Their little skulls broke like hen's eggs. Why, yes, they did, and spilled their contents generously. I tasted them.
Ew!
Joanna and Charles cry out together and hook their arms around each other. Well, isn't that lovely? Emily says, disgust evident in her expression.
The children screamed and scattered,
Zeke continues, catching the attention of townspeople and stable workers and vendors and my grandfather, who had been sitting outside while practicing his biblical catechisms. The commotion caught the attention of Sheriff Stokel real quick, a man who'd been quite fond of Kensington and spent many afternoons laughing over cards and cigars with him. The sheriff held his hand over the gun on his belt, but didn't draw as he moved slowly to the cackling man covered in red.
"Now what's this about, Jasper?" Mr. Stokel yelled. "What's all this about, you killing your girls?"
Kensington faced the sheriff in a jerky motion, Zeke says, but he just started laughing all the harder.
"My sweet little girls," he managed to gasp, "and my good wife, too. The claws told me to break their little teeth out with rocks, to see their insides and paint the walls with them, and they struggled. Sheriff, oh, how they struggled."
"Oh, my,"
Joanna says softly. Charles bites his lip.
"That was when Stokel drew his gun," Zeke continues. "He said, 'Drop the scythe, Jasper, and let us take you to a holding cell and get some water in you. What you're saying is nonsense. You're mad from dehydration.'"
The Kensington man fell to his knees, the laughter gone. Suddenly he seemed petrified. The scythe, slicked with crimson and sudden-hearted chunks of yellow and white, fell from his hand and into the dirt. He started begging the sheriff for forgiveness. He was convinced that there were demons in the prairie, that he didn't kill his family at all, but they were dead. All of them, just like Jasper said. The sheriff found the bodies inside the family's cabin. It was a bloodbath.
The children wait for him to continue, their arms still wound tightly around each other. Zeke sits up straight and sighs. The story is over.
"That," Emily says, "was quite the spine-tingler."
"It was gross,"
Joanna crinkles her nose. "But what happened to him?" I ask from the halved log, my hands clasped together in a frightened fist in my lap. "What happened to Jasper Kensington?" Zeke looks into the fire, unblinking.
"I'm not exactly sure. My grandfather,
His hand goes to rub his neck.
He never told the story past that point.
"I bet he became a ghost," Charles says. He wiggles his finger in Joanna's ear and she screeches. "I bet he wanders all around the prairie at night, dragging chains and saying, ooh, ooh."
Zeke chuckles. "Perhaps you are right. I could have sworn yesterday on my way home that I saw chain marks in the dirt." Charles's face goes from entertained to terrified in a second. "Joking, of course," Zeke says. "You won't find any ghosts on this prairie." I am not relieved or satisfied, for what am I to gather from this? That I will continue to lose my mind and eventually kill my own family? The cries in the night have startled me so, as did the sight of the infant standing upright in the dark, but I haven't been hurt by anything. Nobody has. I haven't wanted to hurt anyone.
But you have.
I remember the moment after the miscarriage, how I stepped outside when Hannah was crying, how I broke open the skin of my palms and felt as though I would have done anything to silence her. But that wasn't anything real, right? It was the sorrow of losing my own child that drove me to the thought. I wouldn't have truly done anything to hurt her. I couldn't have.
You've been praying for her death since before the prairie.
How despicable that I repeat this to myself as a comfort. It's no wonder the devil came for my soul in the woods.
There is one other thing that my grandfather always said, Zeke mentions, staring at Emily to ensure that she's listening. He said that even though the prairie wasn't safe, the forest always would be.
How convenient, my sister laughs. It's safe where you live, but the poor Verners are doomed.
He doesn't look amused by her joke. A wild thought crosses my mind. He thinks I'm going to hurt them. He's trying to protect Emily from me. Zeke stands and kicks the fire out with the loose dirt that surrounds the rocky perimeter.
I should be going now, he says. But I have to say, it was pretty fun to see the faces of the children. You do know it was just a story, don't you?
Joanna and Charles nod, but don't look entirely convinced. It is, right? I ask, standing too, my voice quickening. Zeke, it's only a story? Amanda, Emily says, confused. What's wrong?
Of course, Zeke answers as he walks to his horse without meeting my gaze. Of course it is.
You're leaving so suddenly. Emily stands up and brushes the bark from the back of her skirt. But still, I enjoyed myself, Zeke. Maybe we can do it another time.
She is trying not to sound desperate for my sake, but still I can sense that she is pining for him. And by the way he turns around, looks into her eyes, and steps close enough to kiss her if he wanted, it's clear he feels the same way. This is when I fully realize that the postboy from the mountain never loved me at all. The intensity between my sister and the boy who lives in the forest is unmistakable, even after such a short time. It's something I never had with Henry, and the envy is almost physically painful.
Why don't we gather in the forest next time? He looks to the children now, too, and me. We could tell stories in the shade of the trees and not have to worry about the snakes. Please?
I think of Zeke's shaking hands, holding the shotgun when I first saw him outside the cabin. I think of his hesitant glances and unanswered questions, and the urgency in his voice now. He is afraid of the prairie.
Does he know that I'm losing my mind?
Maybe we can sometime.
Emily shrugs, looking to me for input.
If Amanda wants to, of course.
Yes, I say, suddenly feeling very vulnerable out here in the grass. I want to get back to the cabin right now.
Sure.
Zeke nods, takes Emily's hand in his for just a second, then turns back for his horse. He mounts in a smooth, swift motion that reminds me a little bit of Henry.
So long, Werner family, he calls over his shoulder. Watch out for ghosts tonight.
17.
By the time a few days have passed, I've learned that constantly anticipating something terrible happening is almost as bad, if not worse, than the occurrence of an actual incident. Something is building up in the air. Something quiet, but distinct. A vast heaviness that I cannot quite put my finger on. Pa has just returned from a trade and supply run to Elmwood, and announces that the rest of the day will be dedicated to rest and relaxation, with an especially fancy dinner to celebrate how well-received his pieces were.
Nobody works today,
he grins, handing out whorehound candy and dried blackberries that remind me of the mountains. Ma drags her rocking chair out into the front clearing so she can sit and look into the endless sea of flatlands, which are currently being shaded by thick smears of dark clouds that cover the sun. Since we've arrived, the heat has receded if only just a little bit, and the winds bring a welcomed rush of additional comfort. I haven't been able to get the story of Jasper Kensington out of my mind, and now I second-guess every thought that I have. I vow to myself over and over again that no matter how unraveled my mind becomes, I will not hurt my family. My thoughts cannot trigger evil, I think. My thoughts cannot invite demons. I also haven't been able to stop thinking about Hannah. Since my period of brief closeness with my baby sister, I feel as though she is always seeking me out, and even though looking at her still reminds me of what I've lost, I am also being steadily poisoned with the worry of losing my mind and hurting someone. Because even if what Zeke said about the prairie isn't true, clearly something terrible and irreversible has happened to cause such hysteria within me. How long will I be haunted like this? If it becomes real to me, the others could suffer for it, and that is what petrifies me. I cannot let it happen. If I tried to explain a word of this to Ma or Pa, they would think that I was a witch or something of the sort, no way around it. And I thought their reaction to my pregnancy would be catastrophic. It's hard to believe that I was so absorbed with that problem, so distressed and hopeless and sure of my fate. I would kill to have that problem again. In the early hours of the afternoon, it begins to rain, and everybody takes shelter in the cabin. I go to the area of the floor where Hannah sits exploring the giant head of the grizzly rug.
She seems to like the teeth the most, and runs her fingers up and down the hardened gums and jaw of the beast. I slide my hand over her chubby calf, and she turns on her knees to wrap her tiny arms around my neck with an excited shriek.
Puck!
She cries out. I pull her close to me, kiss her fuzzy eyebrow. Hello again, sweetness, I whisper against her hair. I hum a low tone for as long as my breath will go, and the baby lays her head happily on my chest to feel it. I transition into a hymn called Come Holy Ghost, slowly and gently rocking the baby back and forth, and willing her to feel and understand my thoughts as she falls asleep. I do not want you to die. I am so sorry that I ever did. I take it back. I love you. I love you. I love you. This needs to be over now, I think to myself in desperation. The madness must stop at once. Oh my, Ma says from the rocking chair, her voice fragile. I look up at her to see that her eyes have gone misty and her knitting rests forgotten on her lap. That is just precious, Amanda. What a sight of true and wondrous joy. I don't realize until now that there are tears on my cheeks. Emily has looked up from her button collection, but doesn't appear nearly as touched as Ma. In fact, she seems worried.
There's no reason to cry, Amanda, Pa says from where he sits on a stool, whittling a new handle for his hunting knife. That baby knows how much you love her.
As if you would know, I think. You understand her about as well as you understand me. I'm fine, I say. I'm just sorry I didn't help you more with the baby until recently, Ma. Oh, dearest. Ma nods sharply and begins working on her knitting again. There is nothing to apologize for. Hannah's eyes are closed into tiny half moons. I continue to rock her, even after the song is finished. Her hand grazes my arm up and down with such tenderness. I imagine how horrible it would feel to hurt her. It will never happen. Suddenly, the baby's hand stops stroking the fabric of my dress and goes limp. Her blank expression twists into one of concern, and she moves her head to a different part of my chest, as if she's listening to something. Of course she isn't listening to anything. She doesn't hear. I am imagining it. Hannah whimpers, then wriggles out of my grip so that she's sitting beside me. Her eyebrows are pulled together, and her gray eyes widen without blinking as she leans over and sets her ear directly over my womb. I look up in surprise to see if Emily is witnessing it, if anybody is, but they've all gone back to what they were doing, and I am alone in my wonder. I watch Hannah's face as she sits still, her expression becoming steadily more afraid. Hannah, I whisper, no longer entirely sure that she can't hear me. My heart skips in my chest when she looks up sharply in response. Her eyes have no whites. They are entirely clouded with gray, like the eyes of a dead fish, like the baby standing outside in the grass that night. The baby begins to scream. She reels backward from me and begins crawling away as fast as she can, stumbling over the fabric of her skirt at first. Her eyes are back to how they always are, but I'm still so startled that it takes me a moment to lean forward and try and help her. As soon as my hands are on her, the screams intensify. Just start humming again, Ma says nonchalantly from the chair. Just grab her and... But I've already pulled my hands away in reaction to the screams, and Hannah bounds forward off the grizzly bear rug and into the mouth of the fireplace. I expect her to stop as soon as she feels the heat from the flames, but to my horror, she keeps going. She's going to crawl into the fire. Grab her! Ma cries from the rocking chair and hurls herself forward. She gets to the baby right in time, sweeps her up so quickly that a flurry of ashes swirl into the air after her feet. Oh my God, she almost went in! Oh my God! Is she all right? I stand up quickly and go after Ma, who snaps to face me with a look of anger and revulsion.
How could you just let her crawl in like that? I saw you. She got away from you and you just let her.
Ma, Emily says in surprise, Amanda wouldn't do that on purpose.
Of course I didn't do it on purpose, I plead, trying to stroke Hannah's hair. But every time I come close, she gets even deeper into the fit. It all happened so fast.
Your sister almost died, Ma yells into my face. I've never seen her lose control like this. None of us have.
The children sit in their toy corner, still as statues as they look on with big worried eyes.
After everything she's been through, she could have died due to your carelessness.
I step away, trying hard not to cry, and as soon as I back away, the baby falls silent. She doesn't want me near her anymore.
Why? What have I done? What did she hear in my womb?
That is enough, Susan.
Pa says it with such force and intensity that Ma pulls herself together in an instant.
Hannah is fine. Look at her. It was a close call, that's all. And now you frighten poor Amanda into thinking she's responsible for something that didn't even happen. This was to be a day of rest and relaxation, and it will be. This conflict is over now.
Ma looks ashamed. Daughter, I apologize. I was just so scared, my baby.
It's all right, Ma, I say. The baby's eyes are closed.
You don't need to explain. I
don't know why Hannah dislikes being close to me all of a sudden.
I tell everybody that I need some fresh air and stand just outside the door, in the drizzling rain. I let it fall into my hair and dress, barely feeling it, not knowing what to do next. If Hannah had crawled into the fire, would it have been my fault? My doing? Did something inside of me want to let her crawl in?
No. Something happened in there. Hannah sensed something. Her eyes changed. She became terrified of me.
The door to the cabin cracks open and Emily steps out to join me.
What is the matter with you? She says. Something has been bothering you for days now.
How do I even begin? I'm terrified of myself. I almost feel nervous for my sister, for being out here with me alone like this. Who knows what sorts of things will continue to happen around me?
At first I thought it was because of your baby, Emily continues, but ever since we went to visit with Zeke at the fire pit, I've realized that it has to be something else. You're not acting sad, sister. You're acting scared.
What is it?
I thought there were to be no more secrets between us.
From the distance comes a roll of thunder. I cannot take it anymore. The secrets, the lies, the guilt, the fear. I have to find a way to let them all go. I can no longer manage to believe that keeping it all inside will somehow protect them. I am no longer able to figure this out on my own. I need to get it out to Emily, and I need to get it out now. If I am to lose my mind, someone will need to understand what is happening. Someone will need to protect my family from me.
I'm going mad, I say, and already I feel some release. I hear an infant crying at night outside the cabin, and I saw something standing in the grass where I miscarried.
The nightmares will cease eventually, Emily promises and takes my hand in hers.
Don't be too afraid of them. You are strong, Amanda.
You don't understand, I say and start sniffling. The rain lessens, and I hear the sound of Ma rustling around some cooking pots inside. They weren't nightmares. I really heard the cries. I went outside in the night, and I saw a baby in the prairie. I saw it with my own eyes, Emily, and I was awake. I was. And the knock on the window.
Listen to me carefully, sister. Emily cuts me off, her voice slowing. This is just like that time on the mountain. There was no knock on the window that night. You imagined it.
Then I imagined it. I give up, throwing my hands in the air, making my sister jump. But if I am, then would you mind telling me why? Just now with Hannah, her eyes changed. They looked like they belonged to a dead fish. I think she's in danger, Emily. I think that Hannah is in danger.
Stop this, she insists. This is all coming from your stress and your fear. You can't even rest properly because of it.
I feel you on the other side of the mattress, tossing and turning all through the night. You're not even sleeping at all, are you? That's why you're hearing things again.
Emily, I whisper, this isn't the same thing as what happened on the mountain, or at least I don't think so.
But how would you know? My sister challenges. You've endured an extraordinary amount of stress. Your mind could still be vulnerable from last winter, and you haven't gotten a decent amount of sleep since, you know, since my baby was taken from me?
Yes.
I don't continue for a moment. I was wrong before, when I thought that nobody had been hurt in the midst of all of this, when I was trying to convince myself that I could endure the madness forever. I was hurt. My baby was hurt.
You prayed for it.
You have guilt over the baby, don't you? Emily says, peering into my face. You think it was your fault that it happened? I didn't want the baby, Emily. I was so mad when I found out I was with child. I wanted it to end.
It wasn't your fault.
Maybe. Listen to me, Emily urges. Please, you'd been through a hard time. You needed a distraction to survive. The outcome was unfortunate, but it happened all the same. I don't reply, and she takes my hand. Just promise me that tonight you'll take some deep breaths. You'll stop thinking about the boy from the mountain and whatever sounds you've been hearing in the night, that you'll force yourself to rest. Truly rest, just like after you saw that thing in the woods. And if I continue hearing things, seeing things? Emily pauses, studying me.
I am so very worried about you,
my sister says gently, squeezing my hand.
The circles under your eyes are dark enough to look like bruises, Amanda. You've grown so thin. The color is washed out of you. You have got to promise me that if this continues, if even one more thing happens that seems out of the ordinary, you'll tell Ma and Pa so they can take you to Dr. Jacobson. And tonight, you must sleep.
I feel as tired as I must look. I just want her to be right. More than anything in the world, I want to let go and forget about all of this. I only need some sleep, perhaps even a doctor. Either way, everything will turn out fine in the end. All right, I agree, and Emily hugs me tight.
Just for tonight, I'll listen to you. Thank you,
she breathes, relieved.
I've never given you rotten advice before, have I?
No.
Precisely.
The embrace ends, and she points back to the cabin.
Let's go help Ma get started with supper. The baby is sleeping by now, so there's nothing to worry about. Just relax, sister. Relax your mind and body. Everything will be all right. Hannah is not in danger.
I nod, even though something still doesn't seem right, and turn to head back inside. I am tired of trying to figure this out, for now. 18. An hour later, Ma and I are searing thick slices of salt pork that Pa purchased in town. The crisping meat spits enthusiastically when I turn it with my fork, and it smells lovely. Ma has apologized for getting cross with me at least 4 times since I came in from outside, and after finding me a dry dress to wear, hugged me tight and told me she loved me. I pay close attention to my breathing, keeping it long and slow and deep. Joanna and Emily use wooden forks to smash the potatoes we boiled previously into a smooth, creamy mush against the sides of a big bowl. The steam rises from the mash as they stir in a boiled garlic clove and spoonful of seasonings. Charles sets out a plate of cold cornmeal cakes left over from lunch and smears them with honey. Once the meat is out of the pan, we use a little of the starchy potato water to loosen the browned meat bits in the pan for gravy. Not even I can resist the unbeatable power of a hot, filling meal. We all listen to Ma and Pa exchange lighthearted chatter while we eat, a
about things like hunting some deer meat from the woods soon for stew and dumplings, or attempting an apple pie in the new fireplace, since it's so roomy and everything. Charles sucks the hot pork grease from his fingers, and Ma doesn't even scold him for it. Afterward, we lie around with full bellies, drunk from all the food, and Pa pulls out his old fiddle to play and sing us a tune about fishing